We had about 120 of those cities that we kept going back to them year after year. And yeah, that's how I was able to build my core business. Because you usually have to love yourself first and radiate that out. And also gives these great tips about how to use AI and all sorts of tools.
Welcome back, friends, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm Jeff Holman, your host, and I am here. I said friends, welcome friends, but I really want to say welcome friend, Nikki Coe, to the show. Nikki and I, we met, well, I'll go into that a little bit later, and we'll talk a little bit how we met, because I think there's some of that is context for all of the fantastic and amazing things that Nikki has done. But Nikki, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's fun to reconnect. You and I haven't talked a ton lately, but I bet I'm the only person who has spent, 8 days with you in tea house bunk rooms in, you know, trekking through Nepal. Is that correct? Has anybody else done that?
Yeah, that is correct. All the way up to Everest Base Camp. And that was amazing.
That
life changing.
That was so cool. When we spent those days, that was what, 2 years ago, right? Two and a half years ago.
Yeah. So meaningful. I think that was definitely one of the most physically and mentally, I think that every time I saw us at one of those tea houses, I kept looking at you and thinking to myself, I can't believe you made it. I can't believe I made it. I can't believe anyone else made it. That was insane. I'm so amazed that we actually survived that thing.
It was amazing. It was, you know, and for those who haven't been, just a little bit of context there, you you go to Kathmandu, you fly to a place called Lukla. It's about 9,000 feet. I guess that's maybe 3,000 meters, right? And then you hike up to, you probably do over 8 days. You hike through maybe six different villages along the way, stay in these tea houses, and you eat the food on the main floor, go upstairs and sleep on the upstairs. It gets colder and colder as you go higher and higher towards Everest Base Camp. And at Everest Base Camp, what we saw was the Everest Base Camp village, which is a bunch of empty tents because all the climbers going to the peak were at the top or on their way to the top while we were there. But you also see the Khumbu ice fields, which is, you know, we're told, we didn't go through them, but they're the most dangerous parts of climbing Everest. That's where people often, each year, somebody gets lost or falls into a crevasse and they never find them. It's a very dangerous place. And so we were able to climb up there together and with a small group and our guide DB, you know, it was a lot of fun and a lot of work.
Yeah, and all of us made it all the way, which is amazing. I mean, some of us had to go straight to the emergency room, but I think that was great.
Yeah, I did. You know, I'll confess, I opted to grab and share a helicopter ride back with you. That was one of the most depleted times I've ever experienced. Aside from you probably heard I went to Kilimanjaro the next year, and I got helicoptered off before somebody because I was getting fluid in my lungs. So, you know, I don't have a great track record with these things.
But you definitely looked pretty strong when I was climbing with you. You're always at the front.
Yeah, that was a fun trip, and we had a great group. Well, on that trip, let me remind you about one experience from that trip that I think really captures how I know you. And I think, let me say this up front, I think there are so many dimensions to you. You have so much going on. You've done so much. You've accomplished so much that you might be the most interesting man in the world in real life. But this one moment I remember really distinctly. It was the night before we made the final leg up to Everest Base Camp. And well, it was the morning of, I should say. You'll remember we got up early that morning. It was like 4:30 or 5 a.m. I had a splitting headache from the altitude. I did not want to eat. I was just, you know, those pillows that we had there, they were really hard. I should have brought my own. And I just remember it was dark in the room. We had to get up. And I, you know, kind of opened my eyes or something. And I kind of rolled over and our beds weren't too far apart. And there you were sitting on the edge of your bed. I think you were dressed already for the day. And you just said, "Hey, Jeff, if you were able to do it all over again," and I'm like, "Whoa, wait, I'm still waking up, Nikki. Your mind was always going, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do to, you know?" And we had a conversation, but I had to, you know, wake myself up and catch up to you, or at least try to catch up to where you already were at 5 a.m. for the day, you know, in the, what they call the pyramid, right? Was that Labuche, if I remember right, in the pyramid? And you were wide awake, already thinking, already like reflecting on things. I think that's what you do, right?
I wake up every day at 4:30 to 5:30. Start my day strong. I think that is the number one thing that Warren Buffett says allowed him to get success. I know Ray Dalio and Bill Gates also claim the same. I love getting up early. I love reflecting. I love meditating to start my day. I think also meditation is supposed to be one of the number one things to start your day. So I always love doing that. I do remember that day. I remember that I've never felt 3 hours where it felt like ice, or the, even just the wind, but it felt like ice was penetrating every pore of my body. Not the most pleasant feeling. But I think that I've gone through a lot of ups and downs in my career, and pain and suffering is something that you could tell a story about. You know, so some people experience sensations in their body. I've learned this in like Vipassana meditation retreats, where you'll say, "Wow, this is unbearable. I can't deal with it." Other people say, "I'm still around. I'm dealing with the sensations, but it's just a sensation." And I think I've learned that through like a bunch of business experiences. And I'd love to actually share some of those with you, and like how I've gone through, I think, what you call breakout moments.
Yeah.
I think that your audience is really interested. CEO breakout moments.
I would love to hear some. And so I just wanted to get a little bit of intro, let people know where you and I met and how that happened. But let's do that. Give us a background, at least at a high level for now, about some of the things you've done. I think we'd need 4 hours to get a summary of everything you've done, but give us a high level view of where you've been and kind of where you're at now.
Well, I spent 25 years building a company called Self Mastery Company from zero to over 100 million in revenue. I exited that company, and then I went on a 7-year traveling tour where I went to 150 countries doing over $2 million in spiritual journeys. Every Tony Robbins program, Deepak Chopra program, living in marble temples in India, going to Latin America and doing tribal rituals. And then buying back that company after launching a new AI business, a tech house program, where last year I traveled 4 to 7 times a week doing presentations and teaching AI and entrepreneurship. And people could live with me in a tech house environment. And in 30 days, they go from not having a business to having a successful company.
That's awesome. And I think you might have introduced me to AI back. In fact, every time we'd stop at a tea house, not to dwell too much on this, but what was your AI assistant's name? Was it Stacy or?
No, there's an app. It's called Call Annie.
Call Annie. That's what it was.
And Annie, at the time, looked like an animated image that you could talk to, and she has memories. She remembers everyone you're talking to, about them, everything. Now it's actually custom avatars that could look like however you want her to look.
Yeah, you were doing that, and then you were also creating photos of us reaching the summit before we reached the summit. So, yeah, you were all over AI.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to manifest our success.
yeah, that was awesome. And so you've been doing AI stuff now for a while. Is it safe to say, this is my perception, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I would guess you're one of the top experts in AI in the world. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I have a great book called Unlock AI Mastery. It's the number one best-selling book on AI. We definitely one of the pioneers in terms of AI, because I had access to GPT before it became GPT-2, before it was launched to the public, before there was even API access or it was public. And I also was grateful to also have a father who actually wrote one of the first articles about AI, even before it was called AI. My dad was a computer science professor, so I grew up taking his classes from age 12 to 16, I had to take his computer science classes until I eventually ended up building a website development company and then started doing tech development on the back end for Intel and UPS. Eventually, that turned to me building a tech platform for personal growth education, which eventually became a self-mastery company, which teaches, originally taught dating advice, and then went to personal growth advice, business advice, all sorts of things. But we basically just manage influencers. And now we're an AI-focused company using AI for integrations to accelerate our growth.
And for the listeners, this is what it was like every time we stopped on the trail. We went to different places and we'd learned something new about all the accomplishments that that Nikki has had. Because you really have done so much. I think the one that stood out to me was you said you were a, and this is, it stood out only because it was, you know, you've got all these degrees, you've started all these companies. We talked a lot about that for several days. And then one day you're like, you start talking about polo. You were the captain of your polo team at school, right? And I'm like, wait, that too? Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, when you're like a teenager, you know, you don't really have any money, and my parents were pretty frugal. So to cover horse riding lessons and polo school, I did a development on websites for a guy who owned a polo ranch. Eventually I went to boarding school and Princeton University at the same time. And I was able to then be captain of my polo team. And that was a pretty cool experience. One of the unique things about me is that I've been in university since I was 12. So I've completed 6 degrees, done, three different bachelors. I've done a couple masters and then a JD, and I'm on a PhD program right now for AI.
Yeah.
But I'm really just doing that as kind of like, you know, a continual learning process, because I've literally been in university my entire adult life. I'm 45 now. So that gives me 33 years of university education.
Yeah. No, you're a busy guy. How does all that, like, what's the thread that ties all that together? You know, all the things you've done, the things you're doing, where you're headed. What's that thread line for you?
Well, my highest value is continual learning and education, knowledge, and continually seeking that. I've also been always pretty unstructured as an entrepreneur. My first company that I created as an adult was like a private wealth management company. But by the time I was 22, I then built an education company. And then following that, 60 other small education companies. Each of them were managing around different influencers. And so 20 of them turned into 7-figure plus businesses, and into an 8-figure business. And now I have control of one of the businesses, which is the main business of education. But that's a company that also has had huge swings and huge, I guess we call, breakout moments that have kind of inspired my life, because I think I've learned a lot more in the field than I have learned in university. You know, I think that if you look at the time period of our lives, some of the biggest issues that we face are things like the recession in 2008. Mm-hmm. Now, for example, for that, I actually had to do huge pivots for all my businesses. But more than anything, what got me into the point where I'm now like kind of a speaker of all kinds is that in 2008, my biggest and first career breakout moment was when I had about $500,000 in debt on my credit card. Now you're like, well, yeah, how do you even get a credit card with $500,000? Well, I basically had like eight credit cards, and I kept growing them. I kind of charged my business expenses to it. Then I did cash withdrawals to pay off the balance. I kept raising the limit until it eventually turned into $500,000. Wow. I call it the money tree, inventing credit out of just credit cards, which actually worked until I had this recession, and people at the time, they were traveling to this $45 million house in Los Angeles and doing events. And at that kind of like an event center, people could live there.
Yeah.
Could go to my different events, but eventually people didn't want to travel to Los Angeles. So I was $500,000 down, had no ability to pay for anything. And I remember I bought a flight to go visit my business partner. And it was on Delta Airlines. In the back of it was a map of all the cities Delta flies to.
Okay.
And so what I decided to do was, noticing that I had 1 million people on our website each month, I decided I was just going to put all the cities on the map, just on the internet with a date next to it. And I was going to fly to all of them. And I had no money. So I had no money for flights, no money for hotels, no money for venues, didn't even money for expenses. What I did have was an email list, so I emailed
and
that.
And no credit left, right? You
no credit out, left. I was
maxed out the cards.
Maxed out. and so I said, hey, I would love to travel to you, have you learn from all these seminars and workshops that our company teaches. In fact, I'll do it for free, these 4-hour presentations, but I need some help. I need people to give me their flight miles. I need hotels, any lodgings. If you have a couch to stay, that'd be great. If you have an office I could do a seminar at, that'd be great. So I got over 1,000 inquiries in the first 6 hours.
So this is pre Airbnb, pre co-working spaces, and you're essentially inventing Airbnbs and co-working spaces so that people can host you and then invite their friends into hear this, or what's the draw?
Yeah, exactly. I had people say, oh, you could use my university classroom, or hey, I work for a nonprofit, you could use their office, or hey, I know this park you could do a seminar at. You crash at my house, I'll drive you from the airport. In fact, I'll even drive you across the whole country. And I was like, wow, well, that's great. So I literally traveled to those 270 cities and 70 countries that Delta flew to at the time over a 6-month period. Now, if you do the math on that, 6 months has about 180 days. So I'm talking about 1 to 3 cities per day, 4-hour events. So in a day could be I'm in a car driving to Portland from California. And in the morning, I'm doing a program in Portland. In the afternoon, I'm doing a program in Seattle. The evening, I'm doing a program in Vancouver. Or it might be I'm on a plane and fly to London. And I do a program in London, and an afternoon in Dublin, and evening in Casablanca. But sometimes I would just spend one day in the city and do a program there. What I did is I did these free events. Anywhere from 40 to 400 people would show up.
Now, did you have a team with you? I want to hear about the events, but just you.
Nobody else. I booked my own flights, my own travel. I had no one working for me. But what I did do is every single city I traveled to, I said, who here wants to buy my product and service is $300.
Yeah.
It's going to get fulfilled by other people, but I also have some DVDs and videos at the time.
Yeah.
And you buy those. And 20% of them would sign up. And I'm like, that's great. Also, raise your hand if you have a couch for me to crash on, because I have nowhere to stay.
This is why you're speaking. Hey, I'm going to tell you about this stuff. And at the end of the day, I need somewhere to stay if somebody wants to give me a couch.
And I'd always have one person sign up. It wasn't always the best. I mean, one time I was in Berlin, I got a warehouse where there wasn't even a bathroom in a warehouse, but you know, that was great. I had a place to stay. Wow. I also had a time where at a third upsell would be also, who here wants to volunteer for this thing called the Inner Circle? It'd be a local Facebook group in your city, where kind of like a fraternity, we'd have a president, a vice president, secretary, marketing, and you'd organize local events based on the curriculum that I'm going to be selling to you.
Yes. Did you have the curriculum already, or was this, something you were kind of just, you were building the airplane as you were flying?
No, I bought it. I built it while I was in the airplane, while I was flying. And then from train to train, I would also do that. And if I was in Europe, I paid $500. You get like a 21-day, 21-country pass, and I maximized that.
Okay.
I had people drive me from city to city across the country for everywhere I went. I eventually got, you know, cash flow. I got over $3 million.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good 6-month venture, but I never spent more than $2,000. I covered my debts each month. Like, I spent $2,000 maximum.
Wow.
And I think the most I've ever spent in a month was $2,700. And that was super frugal. But that allowed me to build the base of a network of over 1,000 volunteers working with us for these 270 Facebook groups, geo-targeted per city. And eventually led to me then hiring 10 influencers. And those influencers end up teaching a program that we sold for $300 in each of those cities. Now, eventually we got rid of the majority of those cities. We had about 120 of those cities that we kept going back to them year after year. And that's how I was able to build my core business.
Wow. Wow. And so this is just because you saw the back of a flight, what is the magazine called? Delta, I forget the name of it, but we've all looked at it when we're sitting there with nothing else to do on the plane, right? You just like, oh, look at all these, like, is this common for you? To just kind of put two and two together to create 3 million.
Yeah. So I think that's exactly what happened. And this is just one of those things that happens when you're managing influencers. They're probably the most challenging people to work with, especially highly successful ones. Every influencer I've worked with, we've built from zero so far, but I'm hoping to change that in the future. But you know, I remember another challenge, a breakout moment we had was we had an influencer that was posting dating videos of himself in Japan, but they were kind of offensive. And so he actually had some of his videos edited by people that were offended and turned it into a compilation video, but they made it really extreme. They added dungeons. They added all sorts of like terrorist phrases. And for some reason, people believed it was actually created by him. And so we actually had him in Time Magazine as Time Magazine's most hated man in the world in 2014.
I've never heard of that. Do they do that?
Yeah, if you Google Time Magazine's most hated man in the world, you'll hear about this guy named Julian Blanc.
Okay.
Now, Julian now teaches personal growth about how, because of that, we had him banned from 16 countries. Every country and president and celebrities attacking him. And then he had to overcome his anxiety, and now he teaches how to overcome his anxiety. But one of the things that we did have was we had millions of dollars locked up for years. And so I still have money locked up today, but it's under $100,000 locked up for years because they thought we were a terrorist organization. But fortunately, a very senior person at the FBI's daughter was actually my executive assistant. But it was crazy. We had things like fake anthrax bombs exploding in my house. People in hazmat suits there. We had people following us on programs. So instead of actually doing programs in hotels and having everyone meet at the hotel, we'd meet in a shopping mall and then escort people to the hotel where the conference was had under anonymous names. We even had people attack one of our venues where I had to charter a boat and get people out of there so they wouldn't get beaten up. Unfortunately, we had a mole on that boat, and then when they got off the boat, they got attacked. But we still had crazy stuff.
So this was not your everyday organization then, right? Like, I think people listening to this will say, wait a second, I run a SaaS business, or I've got e-commerce, or I, you know, have a, I'm a professional. Like they won't relate to that, right? You were doing something that was edgy at the time, right?
Yeah, at the time we were pioneering a whole new industry of influencers.
Yeah.
Nowadays, my biggest breakout moments are really just about hustling. So if you look at what we do now, I'm primarily launching new businesses that involve with AI and technology. Mm-hmm. And even in that, I still have to do a lot of the same lessons. For example, in order to grow my business from zero into where we are now, a year and a half later, which is now over $1 million in revenue.
Which business are we talking about right now?
AI Dynamics.
Okay.
Real AI Dynamics.
So, this is the one where I went and you were presenting. You presented four to seven times a week last year, right? On this.
Yeah. I copied my old seminar tour. But now, as opposed to in the past, we actually built our own audience from social media, YouTube, Instagram, email campaigns. This was all built through speaking at famous events. Like mm-hmm. Volcano Summit or Utah Tech Weeks, San Francisco Deep Tech Week.
Yeah.
All sorts of technology events. Like next month, I'm speaking at the Build Stuff Software Development Conference. I'm in a club called the Young Presidents Organization, YPO.
Yeah.
So I'll speak there. I'll speak at an entrepreneurs organization and they have all sorts of chapters around the world. And that's where I found a challenge. Now, it's challenging to build a business and maintain life at that speed. But the typical growth I wanted to have was fast. So that's why I was literally traveling 4 to 7 times a week, different cities, teaching these programs. But it worked. More importantly, though, I think the biggest challenge, if you look at just like any kind of business, it could be a video production business. It could be a life coaching business. It could be a software business that does data cleanup. It could be a real estate company that manages Airbnbs. Any day-to-day company that you want to create. I found that entrepreneurship still is challenging. But we've created a formula of just 150 tasks. Now, if you do these 150 tasks, then you will have a business, guaranteed, impossible not to have clients. I've never had anyone who've done these tasks. It's literally impossible not to get clients at the end
of it. I haven't heard this before. What are some of the are these the tasks that we would think of when running a business?
These are tasks like things like, let's build your personal brand to make you an expert by launching a best-selling book.
Okay.
Let's build a video commercial for your company that really conveys your brand and hooks into the pain of your target customers and shows how your service fulfills that need. Okay. Let's build a 30-page sales letter and branding kit that markets your company in a proper way. Let's build a website and social media campaign that promotes your website. Let's make a list of 40 of your potential target customers and get somebody on the phone to agree to be a customer of your service and product even before their service and product has been completed so we can build your service around their need as opposed to the other way around. Now, that last one is probably the scariest one. It's actually something that we require people to do even before they start the Tech House program. And the other ones, each of those could typically take more than 30 days. But that's an example of what you would do in one of those 150 tasks in 30 days, which means that that entire list of 5 tasks, you might be completing all of those in just one day. Now, that seems impossible. But with AI, it is possible. And so we give people AI tools and methodology, show them how to do it. People work with me one-on-one, and we actually will launch all those things at rapid speed, at rapid sensation. And we do it on such a a phenomenal level that we've now done this every 6 months in different cities, like Las Vegas, LA, Hawaii. We also have available another tech house in India. It's a pretty amazing wow. experience.
And so this is what you're doing with the tech house participants, and you've done multiple cohorts in some of these locations, right?
Yes, we've done multiple cohorts now in Las Vegas. We've also done cohorts in LA. Yeah. It's been pretty cool. Like, some people come for a week, some people come for a month. If you're here for a week, we definitely can't accomplish the entire 150 task list, but we can accomplish a lot.
Wow.
And so we've been doing that. And people could learn more about us or get in touch with me on nikkiko.com. Okay. And you can we'll see all awesome information about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But basically, you'll basically see all these lessons. And I love showing what our people have done. It's pretty amazing. But every single month I launch it, I have to launch one of my own businesses. And they have to be completely fresh businesses.
Wait, so you're running the cohort, but then you're like, while I'm running it, I'm going to do another business. We're going to get it off the ground. And you're doing that in parallel.
Tasks. I'm really? Showing them. I don't want to be an armchair professor. There's so many people that teach in university, and lecture in university. I've been doing that too. But they don't actually do what they're actually teaching about. So in order to prove that it's actually possible, I have to do the same things, the same tasks that I assigned to the cohort. And so my business, Real Aerodynamics, it launched in our first Vegas tech house.
Really?
In real time. So one of the things I had to do was speak at a live event and make an upsell and sell products to clients. So my first event, organized it, had 1,000 people show up. I'm not the only one. One of my other cohort members, he also organized an event, almost 1,000 people. And he sold $130,000 worth of product and services, which is amazing.
Wow.
So it's totally possible to do, not just for me, but also for the people who are participating in the program.
That's fantastic. Well, so you're running all these companies, you're advising, you're teaching, while you're studying, going to school. So what are, for some people, this might feel a little bit out of reach. You know, not everybody has, I don't want to say resources, but although you probably have some resources at this point in your life from the past successes you've had, but maybe not everybody has the belief even that they can do these types of things. What would you say to some of your friends that you run into? Do they all say, hey, I want to be Nikki? Or do some of them say, listen, I can't do what you do because XYZ?
So I think that is one of the biggest things that we teach at Self Mastery Company, how to overcome that mindset, to be able to reach out to other people, to have that inner confidence belief system, to interact with the world with more love, not just because you can, because you usually have to love yourself first and radiate that out and show the gifts that you've been given to the world, but basically know that you have it first. And I think that the other thing is, you're right. There's a lot of things that I'm doing that's impossible without having successive resources. But I think that if you also want to launch just one business at first to get things going and automate that, systematize it, that's where people come to me and that's where they start. And I think it's completely possible for anyone. Look, we have a lot of people that came to the tech house. They just want to be solopreneurs. Okay. So they create a video production company that's still making revenue today, and they create it in a tech house. And all they had to do was just get a client to make videos with. And the cohort also helps each other. They become clients for each other, testimonials for each other, support systems for each other. I think they get just as much value from each other as they do learning from me. I think that's one of the great advantages of having everyone focus in a community at the same time on one thing. But also, I think that I could also hold people's hands and allow this delight, see what's possible. And that's why I love mentoring people. I do that all the time through online coaching clients. Each month I meet with coaching clients that, you know, have gone through the tech house and now they want to continue pushing things forward. Yeah. I think also the other thing that people don't realize is that a lot of the inner belief systems that people have about who they are or what gifts they have is completely false. I think that the biggest one for me is that people think they're stuck in a static environment. But I believe that 100%, with 100% confidence, that anything is possible for anyone, no matter who you are, no matter what background you have. I've seen time and time again. Now, usually it's not going to be done with the exact same story as me or the same pattern as me. But that's also why I became a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this group called Tier One, where I was educating people on entrepreneurship. Calls from people from all over the world, not just from the USA, but from all over the world. And my goal was to help teach people how to create either a job for themselves, a new business for themselves, or how to get a job for themselves. I think a lot of people are just struggling just to maintain that first job or even move up the ladder. I think that's also fine. But I think the biggest thing, though, that people have that's stuck is that they're used to a certain habit. And when you want to get out of like where you are in life, you usually have to break a pattern. We call it a pattern interrupt. It's a term from psychology, from like the hypnosis days of guys like Richard Bandler. And I think that if you look at like what a pattern interrupt is, it's kind of like an instant shift in your belief systems. Like you're saying, I can't do this to I can do this, or I can only do this this way, to realizing I can do things in a million different ways, or everything's a yes or no. Almost nothing in this world is a yes or a no. It's usually there's like a bunch of gray area, and that gray area is usually not gray. It's multicolored. And I think that when people start thinking entrepreneurial, and then you become a shade of an entrepreneur. So some people are real, true entrepreneurs, right? Just build new businesses. Other people are entrepreneurial in thought, and it affects their entire personal life, settlements and deals. As you're an attorney, you have to think really outside the box all the time, deal with primarily the entrepreneurs. I think that entrepreneurial mindset to think about what's possible outside the box is probably your biggest gain, the creative aspect of things.
Yeah. Man, there's so much here. We might need to do a full season, like 3 months of Nikki Ko on the podcast to get through all of this. But I want to ask you, because I know you're super busy, and I really appreciate the time you set aside for this. So I want to ask you about some advice you would give to people who are maybe a little bit further back on the path than you are. What are one or two things you would do? But I'm going to give you a second to think about that while I just make a connection back to the beginning of the show. We talked about, you know, you mentioned the 3 hours trekking up to Everest Base Camp on that final day and the ice that you felt in your bones. I remember that very much, that my feet were as cold as they've ever been while we were in the shade. But I distinctly remember about the time we got to where you could see the peak of Everest, because you have to see it from a distance from Everest Base Camp. You can't see the peak at Everest Base Camp, right? About the time we got to where we could actually take a photo of Everest Peak was the time that we walked from the shadows and the shade into the sunlight. And I just remember the transition that was, you know, it was night and day effectively, and, you know, ice cold and getting warmer, I might say. And so that to me is almost emblematic of the breakout moments that we have in our life. We're on this journey and we're going and we're struggling through the dark and the cold, and all of a sudden we hit the light. Maybe we see the peak ahead of us where we're going. Like I was thinking about that as you were talking, and I can only imagine all the paths you've been on, all the times you've been in the shade and the cold, and then found the light, seen the peaks, traveled to the end, and then done it again and again and again, and said, hey, I've been down this journey. Why don't you guys come with me? You know, and you've shown other people this path, and you're like, hey, listen, we're going to get there pretty soon. You're going to feel the sunlight. You're going to see the peak. Like that to me, I don't know. It was just an image I had from walking that path with you and hearing your story that I think it's maybe fitting for what you're describing today.
Thank you. And I very clearly remember that moment, because as soon as I felt the sun that morning, I was just full of so much immense gratitude that I had a relief and a state change from the emotional experience that I had of what I imagine was a torrent of an infinite amount of suffering and of the cold wind flowing through, even though I was wearing, I think, like 4 layers of pants, daggers in every atom of my body. And I'm just so grateful. And that immense gratitude as part of my spiritual journey became like a central focus of my business career. One of the things that I got introduced to when I was at BYU was this concept called Christ-like leadership. And it's not because I believe that, you know, everyone is required to follow Jesus Christ, but I think that the law of lessons that you could learn about compassion, connection, and mostly the principle of gratitude, forgiveness, and all these great principles he taught. So I wanted to focus on those two, gratitude and forgiveness.
Okay,
infinite amounts, because I believe that more than anything, those two things have helped me. So the first one in terms of gratitude is that positive mindset is what I start every day with. We call it a gratitude waterfall. So to start my day, to get me the energy to actually want to push forward, especially when times are tough. And right now, times are very tough. I was just mentioning how I just re-got in and bought into my company. It's been like 3 to 7 days of even just today, writing multiple settlement agreements for all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
The most scary issues you could have from embezzlement,
yep,
from conspiracy, yep, from racketeering, from fraud, all sorts of issues that I have to deal with. And people are like, wow, I can't believe you have to deal with that. But how do you maintain gratitude in that kind of experience? Well, you're so grateful for all the beauty around you everywhere. You're grateful for the fact that you still have certain things in your life, even the smallest things. I look outside and I can see beauty in just like trees, you know, just all the little things that we do have that we could see, that even that alone, but actually feel it, resonate with it, connect with it. These are the things that allow you to push forward so the stress doesn't overwhelm you into a complete state of immobilization. And I think that other part of it is an infinite amount of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn this, not just in business, because in my business, I've had every other year massive similar experiences, including everything I told you about every other year in the amount of 6 or 7 figure losses.
Yeah.
And it's been tough for a career like that. But you know, I also do think that you truly become a true entrepreneur once one of those things happens to you at least one time.
Yes, I think so.
I think as a joke, I used to say, you're not a true entrepreneur until you dealt with your first lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're doing the show, because so many CEOs, they don't necessarily want to talk about those things because it doesn't sound like something you want to share. It's not successful. It's not prestigious. But having people like you on the show, not just to share your insights and stories, but to allow people to, you know, see a little bit behind the curtain. It's so valuable, I think, from my perspective as an attorney counseling a lot of different CEOs that don't think that they have anybody to turn to. You know, they don't know that they have a mentor or someone who's actually experienced a lot worse than them, you know, but still is going down that path. And I love that you're still talking about gratitude and forgiveness, you know, maybe even more so because of the things you've been through.
Yeah. And I would love to help anyone who's going through a similar situation, because it's a passion of mine. And I think that forgiveness for me, is actually a gift to yourself as opposed to the person that you're actually forgiving. And that sometimes is yourself for not putting yourself in a better situation, realizing you're still learning throughout the whole process. And it's the journey that you're even more grateful for, because that's why we were brought here to this planet. God literally put us here on this planet for the whole purpose of having us become more like him and learn through these experiences and grow. It reminds me of how I had a beautiful pet peacock. He came to me as a wild peacock, literally flew into my house through the front door that blew open during a storm to shelter. Pretty weird experience, but these things just keep.
I'm so glad you brought it up, because I wanted to hear a little bit about the peacock again.
Well, this peacock came to me at a unique moment, because I just read about, I love saying multiple faiths, you know, so I loved reading the Bhagavad Gita and how Krishna is a manifestation of God as a peacock feather behind his ears. So I just finished reading that. And next morning, I wake up in my kitchen and I go, there's a peacock in my house. How did you get in here? I don't know, you can't like fly through walls, right? But yeah, my front door blew open, and the next 6 years, I fed this peacock. Fed him raspberries. I left the back door open. He'd always fly back in to eat food every day. And until one day, one of my neighbors came and killed my peacock with a crossbow. And I was pretty traumatizing. I was pretty sad. I was literally in some of the deepest tears of my life. I loved that peacock. Yeah. But when the media came over to interview me about what happened, I told them that my biggest lesson I've learned, the gift I had, was massive forgiveness. I completely forgive. I know that not everyone on this call follows Christ, but I forgave, just like how like the immense forgiveness that Christ had to have for the betrayals that he's had in life. And it gave me a massive amount of relief and freedom. Now, I'm not mentioning that because, you know, you also have a peacock or a pet or expect someone in your life to be assassinated by a crossbow. But I'm saying that because by doing that, I was able to give myself peace in my heart, and I was able to use what happened there as a sense of renewal and purpose to try to make the world a better place, to prevent these kind of things from happening, to kind of educate people about why this happened. Because I know that what happened there was because whoever did that and didn't really understand fully how they're affecting the world, they wouldn't do that. They did not know what they did. And I think that that allowed me to also connect so that when people do things that violate my expectations, my clarity, whether it's a theft, whether it's a violation of trust, where I think that things are supposed to be done a certain way or another, I can let go. It allows me to move forward calmly, collectively. And so I now have two values that I push things forward. One is clarity, that transparency about what people say is full of trust and integrity. And the other one is conciseness. People get to the point, they're direct. There's no like hiding behind things. And that conciseness and clarity allows me to operate business. But it all comes from the standpoint that I had to learn through an immense amount of gratitude and forgiveness. And so if I was to recommend one thing above everything else, I recommend those two values be grown as deep as possible throughout the rest of your life.
I love that. I love that you called it the gratitude waterfall. And I want to call it the peacock of forgiveness, but I'm not sure if that's what you would call it. But it's those are just qualities that, you know, from the moment I met you, we first ran into each other, met up halfway to Nepal when I saw you and Carl in, I think it was Incheon Airport, if I remember correctly, and we were on a layover, and I asked you, I said, so what is it you do? We didn't know each other at all. And you said, well, I'm on a journey right now. I'm on a world tour traveling, you know, the temple sites for the LDS church. And I thought, is this real? That was my first thought. And then I thought, this is, you know, a man who lives at a different level than a lot of people. And I think the advice you're giving about the gratitude waterfall and, you know, the depths of forgiveness and the benefits that is to everyone around you and to yourself, it, you know, that is in alignment with the Nikki Ko that I know. So I'm really glad you shared that.
Well, you know what? To show people actually what I actually did on that tour, I'm going to give your audience a gift. I'm going to send you a link to a video that I was able to record from speaking about AI and entrepreneurship to YPO, the Young Presidents Organization. Okay. Gave me $250,000 budget to hold an event. The only speaker at that event was me. Wow. But I was able to have them have all sorts of fun entertainment, like race cars and small experiences, a private, you know, view of this, of the sphere, and all sorts of cool experiences attached to it. But the content in that video includes AI avatar of Jesus Christ showing a collage of all the temples I went to around the world.
Really?
And also gives these great tips about how to use AI and all sorts of tools. That'll be a gift. I'll message to you. I'll text you and you can give it to your audience.
That is so kind of you. So, well, I think we're at our time now. And I just want to say thank you again. It's been fantastic reconnecting, hearing some of the stuff I'd heard before, being reminded of that, and hearing some new things from you. It really is a pleasure speaking with you, Nikki.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Yeah. And to our audience out there, we're glad you joined us this week. We'll have the show notes up. We'll post this in audio and video across different platforms. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys another week. Take care. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies, to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.